Hello, my name is Annette DeLue, and you are listening to The Heart of You. Thank you so much for joining me today. So, this is going to be the last episode of this season. And part of the reason for that is we are working on the new show called The Akashic Recordings. And that is something that I have been talking about a little bit here and there. So that's going to be starting sometime at the end of January, maybe beginning of February. So we're pulling together these episodes, and what it's going to be is all of those Akashic record readings that I'm doing, that I'm recording with some of the clients that have agreed to let me do this with them. So that should be really exciting for you all to experience what it's like to get an Akashic session with me and learn some information about what other people experience in the Akashic records. I hope you're going to join us in January, February. I'll let you know when that new show is going to be airing. Please pay attention to social media because the announcement will be made there. I will be continuing to do my weekly channeled message, although I will be taking some breaks here and there as I just did a couple of weeks ago. I needed to take some R&R. So over the holidays, I will be taking a break, but I will obviously be keeping you posted as to new episodes. So make sure you are subscribed. If you haven't hit subscribe on your podcast listening device, so whether it's Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, whatever it is, make sure you're following, making sure you're giving it a like on YouTube if you're on YouTube, and make sure you're following me at InfiniteSoulLove1111 on all social media. Welcome back to The Heart of You. Today, we have Shayna Lipner Grover. She is a clinical herbalist, health and nutrition educator, field botanist, ethical wildcrafter, medicine maker, and is the director and primary educator of Sage Country Herb School of Botanical Studies in North County, San Diego. Shayna, I would like to welcome you to The Heart of You today.
Oh, thank you so much, Annette. I really appreciate the invitation.
I would like to ask you about your journey to herbalism. What brought you to being interested in becoming an herbalist?
Well, my favorite origin story goes back to when I was 5. I'm not one of those people that were like making teas when I was, you know, a child. But I do remember going strawberry picking with my mom. And she, while of course, as a 5-year-old, she was doing the picking and I was doing the gorging.
As usual, yes.
Mm-hmm. But then she pointed out this little plant and she said, "You can eat the leaves of this." And I tasted a leaf and it tasted just like a lemon head, like a really sour lemony. And I was very addicted to sour flavor, love sour. And I ate every leaf off of that little plant. I completely forgot about the strawberries. Probably killing the plant now that I think about it. So then that was when I was 5. Fast forward, I was 20. I had moved across the country. I had moved to the West Coast and I was in my 3rd herbal apprenticeship, and it was a field apprenticeship. And they had us taste this native plant to Oregon called oxalis. And I tasted it. And as soon as that flavor hit my tongue, I was transported in my mind's eye to being 5 years old sitting in a strawberry patch.
Oh, wow. It was the same plant.
It was. It was just a different species because it was across the country. And that really, you know, obviously that was my 3rd herbal school. And so I was already interested in herbs at that point, but I hadn't made that connection as to where it really came from, because it came from my mom, who has always been into natural health. Even in the 70s, when she was called the health nut, she was always into trying different things and growing a garden. And so I got into studying herbs mostly because I was a sickly kid, and a lot of that had to do with my diet. And when I had moved to the West Coast and I was really kind of outside of the influence of my family and my community and really just starting fresh, I really wanted to have a healthy impact on myself. And so I started looking into things like herbs. I had a wicked sinus infection and a new friend of mine said, "Here, try this." And while it tasted horrific, it actually cleared my sinus infection relatively quickly. And I was just, okay, I need to learn more about this. So after I had started really getting into studying herbs and then helping my community, and that made me feel really good, as soon as you start studying herbs, your community kind of forms around you of like, oh, you're now our community herbalist and I can come to you.
Okay. Yeah.
So it really kind of establishes those that community network. And then that experience with the oxalis was just so, you know, it was like herbs can taste good, you know, they don't, and they're still effective. And so that really played a big role in me starting a relationship with plants, as opposed to just learning about this plant can be used for said symptom. This relationship is really what got me ultimately started beyond just the learning what I could do with it, but realizing that a connection with plants is a reminder of this basically spiritual connection to all life on the planet that we all used to have and we all still have, but it's very overwhelmed with so much heady stuff. But when we really slow down, and I feel like the pandemic really helped a lot of people with this, of slowing down and realizing that when you connect to the nature of life, when you can get joy from seeing a hummingbird feed on a flower and realize like there's this whole world going on around you. And if you choose to, you can tap into that world and be able to be filled up by nature in this way where we feel really empty from the current Western culture.
Yeah, 100%. I've been a city person most of my life. I've lived in, you know, cities. And right now I have this huge garden on my balcony. And it's something that I've just cultivated over the last few years. And I've always been really big into growing things. But now it's becoming a bit more of a necessity. And I just spent a couple of weeks in Spain and I'm, you know, really realizing how important that connection to nature really truly is. And it's like, it's not that I haven't known that before, but it becomes stronger the more connected you are. Like that pull to be more connected to nature becomes much, much stronger the further you are in your journey.
Absolutely. And it changes from this, oh, wow, that's a cool coincidence, to this, oh, of course we notice that because we're all connected in this way. Mm-hmm. Life energy recognizes life energy. So, you know, I like to say this idea of cultivating relationships. When I do plant walks, I'll often like wave at a plant and it will wave back and people will think like that's really kind of esoteric. And it's like, you know, you don't think it's esoteric when your dog or cat is excited to see you when you've been gone all day. But we think it's esoteric when a plant responds to the energy of being recognized as another form of life. And, you know, some people say, oh, that's just the wind making the plant move. Okay. It doesn't take anything away in my mind. You know, it's still this life energy. And then the more we cultivate this relationship, I can really compare it to like having a friend. You know, my best friend's name is Jessie. She is about 5 foot. She has long, dark hair. And I have another past student and friend that is also named Jessica, has dark hair. These are both powerful women. They look, and they're both around 5 foot. They look from a distance very, very similar. And they are powerful women that have a similar feel. And yet I would never confuse them for each other because I have relationships with them.
Right.
And that's how I talk a lot about learning plants. You know, initially when people first start learning plants, it can seem like nature's like a greenscape. There's just all this green. Mm-hmm. But the more you get to know it, you can start actually picking out like, okay, so those are the trees and those are the shrubs and, oh, those are the flowering trees and, oh, they produce these fruits. And, you know, you start developing this relationship with the plants, with the ecology. And another really important part in our field botany program is allowing yourself to be outside and to recognize that if we're there, then we're part of the ecosystem because humanity has such a separation now from nature is out there and we function over here and we can go visit nature and then we can leave. But actually, we're really surrounded by it. And when we acknowledge that, we can, once again, we can allow ourselves to really be fed in this really deep way that, you know, I was on a road trip with my mom and we had just been going to all these different places and it was great. But as soon as we landed at our family's house in Michigan, I gave my family a hug and then I went out to the back and I just started looking at plants because being in a car for days and just seeing plants fly by, I needed to feel the earth under my feet and just interact with some plants. It sounds, you know, silly to people who don't have that type of relationship, but we all do this, you know, we all have our ways of making ourselves feel comfortable. And I've just found that being able to feel comfortable in nature means that I have a lot of places to feel comfortable in. And it's this life of exploring not only outside, but also within myself and my own relationships with nature and how that cultivates my own sense of happiness, my own sense of purpose, and especially a sense of joy, you know, being able to get joy from just seeing a flower, because I recognize that that flower is finite. Mm-hmm. It really has set the stage to really help me, you know, work through any like, you know, past stuff. As stuff comes up, I have an outlet that is really positive, that's not destructive, that really allows for that processing. And, you know, just sitting in nature and paying attention. Like every time I get overwhelmed with my own life and I start, you know, feeling sorry for myself, it's amazing how like nature kind of presents something of like, oh, you know, well, that issue you're dealing with might be tough, but oh, look over here and, you know, look at all of this going on. It's like, oh gosh, right. There's so much going on in the world, right. Both in what we can hear about on the news, but also just right underneath our feet. And it really helps to pull it back into perspective when I'm having a rough day.
Yeah. It's beautiful that you were talking about the plants waving to you and, you know, having that connection, because I actually just had a session with a client where we were in the Akashic Records looking at soul origin. And oftentimes when people are incarnating on this planet for the first time, they will be flowers and trees and plants.
Oh, I love that.
Because they have to get used to the density of this planet. It's hard for the soul to go straight from soul to body if they've not done it before. So it's like they like get to know the earth, they get to know the land, they get to know the plants and animals and everything before they incarnate in a human body. And so we are so much more connected to the souls that are in the plants and that are in the animals and everything else than we even realize.
Oh my gosh, I love that so much.
Yeah.
And I have not heard it verbalized in that way. And that just like opened up this whole new world. Like I just saw myself in the field with my students, like thinking about that when we do, because we'll do some plant meditations. I'm thinking about this really old coulter pine up on one of the local mountains around here. And we regularly will do a plant meditation in relationship to this huge grandmother pine tree, because you can look around and see every pine tree around it is one of its babies. And so it's a beautiful thing to think about that soul of that pine tree. You know, we always feel like when we do this plant meditation, everybody feels connected to this plant, but to actually relate it to, you know, a soul that is getting comfortable with being on this planet and being in this density. I love that.
And because, you know, time is not linear from our perspective, we think that it's linear, but because it's not, that could be a member of your soul family. It could be somebody that you know in a soul form. You know, you don't know. You have no idea who you're connecting with. And so, you know, when you're talking about like going into nature and sort of observing it and seeing what goes on in nature overall and how it relates to what you might be dealing with and that sort of thing, like I have such a close connection to just the garden that I have on my balcony. And, you know, I have those little roly-poly bugs everywhere and I know they're really great for the garden. And sometimes when I pick up a pot to move it, and I see all of them and their little babies running around like crazy. And I'm like, oh no, I just scared them all, you know, like, and I feel really, really bad because I'm like, oh no, I didn't want to disturb your home. I'm really sorry, but I had to move the spot, you know? So it's, you know, it's this connection that you start having with the plants, with the ecosystem that's going on that is super, super important. So when it comes to your connection to harvesting the herbs, like you were saying, when you were five, you just pulled all the leaves off the plant and it probably died. But like, I know one of the things that you really champion is like ethical harvesting. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, gladly. It is an area that I feel like everybody who has a relationship with nature should have an understanding of ethics. Because I have always grown up and lived in a consumer culture that is based on capitalism, it really puts a dollar sign on, you know, or monetary value on everything. And that makes nature appear to be free. Mm-hmm. So then people feel like it's okay to just gather as many, you know, feathers and rocks and and plant material, and because it's all free and nature just provides. But I live in Southern California, and we have, you know, upwards of 20 million people here in a relatively small area for that concentration of people. And we really saw it during the pandemic when people were like, oh, I just need to get out. And so more and more people were going into nature, which is a, on one hand, it's a wonderful thing. And on the other hand, you could really start seeing the damage of just so many people. And I take very small groups out. You know, we generally are 7 to 8 people at a time. And when we are doing our foraging, which has gotten very, very popular, I think anytime something is going to get really popular, you're going to potentially, if you don't talk about ethics, you are going to do damage to the very thing that you love. Easiest example of this where I come from, of course, is white sage, that the indigenous cultures down here, the Chumash, the Kumeyaay, the Tongva, they all hold white sage in this very ethical high place, that it is a very spiritual plant. And so it was very sacred. The problem that most people who are not of those cultures don't understand is that there's many sacred plants. And we could say every plant is sacred to some degree, but white sage itself, because it's used in ceremony, because it's used as a purification ritual, and people are very attracted to that, that if I could just have the medicine of that, then that would help with my issues, that people end up wanting to overharvest it. And that is a problem on a couple of fronts, because on one hand, the primary areas the white sage grows is on indigenous reservations. And we are of the utmost of respect, and we would never harvest in those areas. We're really, really clear on that, of respecting other people, but also with respecting the plant. I have seen cars pulled over on the side of the road hacking down a white sage plant because they had never seen one growing in nature before. They'd only seen like sticks, you know, all wrapped up. And so they think like, oh my gosh, there's this plant that's going to heal me. And they pull over to the side of the road. And what most people don't understand is that plants on the side of the road are part of their job is to help purify and clean the exhaust coming off of all the cars.
Oh,
so
right.
That is not a plant that you use for medicine. That's a plant that you honor and respect, and you leave it where it's at. And now we have this issue where while white sage is not endangered, because it does grow really plentifully here, it doesn't really grow anywhere else but here. And because of that really heavy focus, that makes it a real problem of people wanting to overharvest. The other thing is that once something can be seen as a commodity and it can, you can make money on it and you can source it for free, that adds to the that desire of what my mentor, Howie Brownstein, likes to call plant lust, where someone is so drawn to something that they just want it, but they don't understand the impacts of their actions.
What would you suggest? Because right now I have a white sage plant on my balcony garden, and I love it. And I basically am able to, you know, harvest part of it to make a stick out of it if I want to. And so I don't actually buy sage anymore. I just grow my own. And so would that be something that you would recommend to people, is to grow their own, or how would you go about that?
No, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Especially with something like white sage, you know, it only indigenously grows here, but you can grow it other places. And even for people here, if you grow it yourself, if you cultivate a relationship with somebody in your community that's growing it, maybe somebody has a little bit of property and they have it growing on their back, you know, acre, and they don't even realize it. If we are cultivating relationships with the plants ourselves and we can grow them, that is the easiest way to be cultivating that relationship without impacting wild. However, I also recognize not everybody has the ability to do that, whether it's a space issue or as it's often called, the black thumb.
Right. Right.
That's a, you know, it's valid. And so that's why we really talk a lot about cultivating relationships with your community, that the more we can recognize that everybody in our community has abundance in some way, and the more we can actually interact with our community. You know, I'm a big proponent of supporting local farms wherever you're at, because farmers are constantly gambling their livelihoods by planting seeds that they're probably not going to harvest and sell the product of for 3 to 6 months. That's a huge gamble constantly, and many things could wipe out that harvest. So the more a farm can diversify and not just sell the lettuce and tomatoes and carrots, but also most farms have either edible weeds that grow all over. And if they're organic farms, so they're not spraying those weeds, well, then we can have a win-win relationship. I bring my students in, I teach them about how to identify these weeds and how to use them appropriately. Most of the weeds, at least around here, are either edible or medicinal, but there are some potentially toxic lookalikes that people have to be made aware of. But when you work with these farms, we can create these win-win relationships. I will pay the farm for the opportunity to bring students there. The students will then take a lot of the weeds, which will help reduce the labor that the farm needs. And then the farm often has a farm stand where the students can fill up on buying produce. So the students leave with knowledge and the weedy pesto that we make together. The farm gets money on a couple different avenues. It's this win-win-win relationship. Well, quite frankly, nobody loses. And in this culture, this Western culture that I live in, the opposite of winning seems to always be losing. But actually, I don't find that to be the case, especially in nature, that when we have these relationships, we all can win. And that's how we can better ourselves instead of just focusing on our needs and our needs alone. The one other thing I want to throw out here is I have been in some social media environments. I have been called out in ways. I had one person, because I brought up the idea of ethics, and I had one person say, oh, well, that would be exhausting if every time somebody made a harvesting video that they're talking about ethics. You don't need to, you know, you don't need to hammer that home. You can. And I was like, nope. Yep. Actually, you do. You absolutely do. They said, you know, I don't want to debate this. I was like, there is no debate. If somebody is teaching people online about harvesting plants and they're not at least saying two sentences about the ethics of harvesting plants, then they're not doing their due diligence to educate people efficiently. And they're actually part of the problem.
Well, and it's also, I think it's part of the learning process, because you said, you know, there are people out there that, you know, claim they have a black thumb. I was one of those people. For a very long time, I thought that there, like, I couldn't keep a houseplant alive. And right. Over the course of the years, I would just learn one new thing, yeah. new thing. And now I have this gorgeous garden on my balcony that, you know, is it perfect? No, of course, there are some plants that just die and, right. and there's nothing I can do about it. Or they're, you know, the bane of my existence at the moment are aphids.
Oh, yes.
So, you know, there are certain times that it's trial and error. And so, you know, I remember the first tomato plant I ever grew, you know, I had bottom end rot and I was like, what is this? Like, my mom's a huge gardener. And so I called her and I was like, hey, what is this? Why is this happening? You know? So she's like, okay, well, you know, inconsistent watering, not enough calcium, da, 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 da. So it's right. like, you learn the little basics here and there, and it's a step-by-step process. Just like anything you want to learn, it is a step-by-step process. It's like learning a language, or it's like, absolutely. You know, learning any new skill. And so with that, if you're not teaching the ethics of it, because the ethics can be so huge when it comes to overusing soil, using pesticides, using this, using that. So like, even just from those perspectives. And then when you talk about wild harvesting, which is something that, you know, when you do your courses, you teach people about what it means to wild harvest. It is important because, like you said, if you have 20 million people going through a park or a state park, taking rocks or plants or anything, like there's going to be nothing left.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's so valuable for people to understand when they think, oh, I'm just one person. Like, yeah, but you're not the only person doing it. And the cool thing about ethical harvesting is that in my mind, it doesn't mean never take. It means you need to actually cultivate a relationship with these ecosystems and educate yourself on understanding the rhythms of those ecosystems. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I went out hiking with a friend and we came upon this stand of chokecherries. They're a native plant around here and they were kind of right at the end. Like they were hanging heavy with these beautiful, like really dark, purpley black berries. But I noticed a lot of them were starting, like half of each bundle were starting to get a little bit wrinkly, like old, which one of the things I'm always aware of when I'm harvesting fruit is that this plant is not growing this fruit for me. It's growing it for the animals that will actually eat the whole berry and then poop out the seed and help the plant spread its seed. That's literally why it's making the fruit. Not for a human to come and take the fruit and then take it away and then get rid of the seed and not plant it. Like, that's not why the plant is making that cherry. But I did notice that since so many of the fruit were already at the point of getting older, that means that, you know, most of the wildlife has probably already been nibbling on this. So I took my very small amount. Now, sometimes I hear people say, oh, ethically means you don't take more than a third of the stand. The stand is how many plants are in a given area. And I take a group of seven people out at a time. And then the next day I take another group of seven. So we have 14 people in the field. So the idea of taking a third, that's ridiculous. There's no way we'd ever do that.
Yeah.
I've heard some people say 10%. Same issue. I take 14 people out. There's no way that somebody should take 10%. And then I've heard some people say 1%. You know, I don't even work on a percentage. When we are done, we just harvest enough for people to make enough medicine for them to experiment for a short time to see, is this a medicine they want to have in their life more regularly? Yes. Then they can start cultivating their relationship more. So when we're done with 14 people harvesting and we start walking away from the stand, we should be able to turn around and only see footsteps and no cuts. You shouldn't be able to tell that we were there taking really anything, because if we do it appropriately, you're taking one little bundle of berries from one bush, move along, another little bundle of berries from another bush, move along. That way, it's not obvious that we've actually, there's no stripping involved, thinking, oh, if I don't eat it, it's going to be wasted. The idea of wasted food or medicine in nature is a human concept. You know, if it's not an animal eating it, you know, or a bird eating it, or it rots and it falls to the ground and the ants take it, or the beetles,
right.
You know, there's no such thing as waste in nature in that way.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to what you were just saying about trying an herb or trying a collection of herbs for a particular ailment that you might have. So you had mentioned the sinus infection. So you use a particular herb, and that's the whole thing, is that oftentimes with the consumer nature of our society, we think, oh, well, we, you know, the book says this, that it's going to help with the sinus infection. So I'm just going to get all of this and then I'm just going to keep on taking it. But it's like, everybody is different, right? So you have to really, you have to test it on your body to see, is this going to work for me? And if it does, that's great. And if it doesn't, then you have to experiment with, you know, potentially other herbs or other things, I would imagine, correct?
Absolutely. And oftentimes something will work and then it will stop working, or it won't work in the same way. And so it's, the thing about herbal medicine is that we are, and I would say this is herbal medicine like around the world, because, you know, in the herbal world, we understand that herbs are medicine for the people around the world. Every indigenous culture around the world has a relationship with plant medicine in some way. So the more we look into, there's wide range of how people practice medicine. You know, Ayurvedic herbal medicine is different than traditional Chinese herbal medicine, is different than Native American medicine. Even that alone is kind of silly, because there are hundreds, if not thousands, of Native American tribes in the United States. And to think that they all practice herbal medicine in the same way is really silly, because they live in different areas. But beyond that, I think most herbalists would agree that we don't formulate for a symptom. While you can do that, and there are herbs for symptoms, if you only formulate for a symptom, then oftentimes you're missing some of the energetics of the person. For instance, you go to a store that has herbal remedies and you're just looking for an herbal remedy for a cough or a sinus issue, and you'll get, you know, this formula that is not formulated for an individual, but formulated for a symptom picture. And, you know, maybe 50% of people will respond positively to that. But the problem is that, you know, even a cough, is it a wet mucousy cough with a lot of movement of mucus? Or is it a dry irritated cough? There are very different herbs used for those two different types of cough. Is it an acute issue? Is it a chronic issue? There's going to be different herbs associated with that. The other thing about this is every herbalist also understands the foundations of nutrition, because if I'm formulating for somebody with asthma and they have this spasmodic asthmatic cough, or, you know, bronchitis, this type of spasm, then if I can use antispasmodic herbs that have a relationship and affinity for the lungs, and it can be great. But if that person is magnesium deficient, which is an incredibly common deficiency, because it's been stripped out of our topsoils,
Yep.
The herbs can only do so much because magnesium deficiency, one of the common symptoms, is spasm, that every cell uses calcium to contract and magnesium to relax that contraction. And if you're magnesium deficient, you can't relax the contraction, which then means that that spasm is a very common magnesium deficiency symptom. So you can go to the store with that cough and you can get a remedy. And oftentimes people say, well, you know, I tried herbs and they maybe worked a little bit, but I don't know. Maybe it was just kind of placebo, but they don't understand the bigger picture. And then you take that a step further and people don't understand. If you're eating a pro-inflammatory diet, you're only making your spasmodic cough worse by giving more energy to that spasmodic cough, because a cough is a way for the body to get things out of the lungs that are not supposed to be there. Right. So it's serving a purpose. And if we acknowledge that, then we can help it along so that we can stop coughing. But if we don't acknowledge that, then we just are trying to suppress a symptom, not understanding the origins of that symptom and perhaps how our daily choices might be contributing to that symptom.
Yeah. And then if you want to take into account the energetic aspect of it as well, then you've got a holistic viewpoint of what might be going on. So, you know, it's interesting. I have had over the course of the last several years, I have had some issues with allergies regarding food, which I'd never had before. I'd always had allergies in the past, but never regarding food. And I keep on having these really weird allergies to milk and cheese. And then like when I first moved to France, I couldn't eat cheese or drink wine. I was like, that's just cruel. It's just mean.
That is cruel.
Like, it's just mean. And so this kept on happening over the course of the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. And so, you know, checking in with my guidance, like part of it was energetic. It was part of, you know, my ascension process in terms of like clearing some of the stuff out of my body. And so when you are going through a lot of those purging processes and your body is already sort of in that inflammation state, then your propensity for inflammations can get even greater. And so
Right. Now
I'm starting to learn, and I just learned this, and thank you to my guides for telling me this, because I didn't know. And I, you know, was about to go to a doctor, which I still am. She's a Chinese herbalist. So we're going to talk about like what I can do from a Western medicine standpoint, as well as holistic, because basically what I think is happening is my microbiome in my gut is actually creating more inflammation right now because of what my diet has been, or because, you know, I had pneumonia back in February, so I was on antibiotics, like that could have made it all like kind of wonky. And so
There
are so many different factors. And if I'm just treating the symptom of like, oh, well, I guess I can't eat cheese now. Okay, well then that's fine. I can do that. But is it really solving the problem? And it's not. So it's like going in and being your own advocate to investigate. Okay, so this is the symptom, but what is the root cause? What is the actual problem? So now I can go and possibly get my microbiome all, you know, happy again. And then I might be able to eat cheese again. Then I might be able to drink wine again, all of those things. Because the thing is that when you have that inflammation and it just keeps on getting worse and worse and worse and worse, and you get more and more symptoms, like you said, the herbs are just going to sort of mask the symptoms and not get to the root of the problem.
Exactly. And then people think like, oh, herbs don't work over time. I actually had an experience where I had a couple of students in a class years ago, and both of them, they'd grown up together. They were runners and they would run 3 times a week. And they both had a little bit of inflammation in a knee. So they would talk about the different things they would try. And one of them was trying a turmeric anti-inflammatory supplement and found it was really helping their knee. So the other one tried it and it didn't really do much. So then they asked in this herb class, like, why would that happen? And so, you know, trying to not make the class all just about them, but I just said like, okay, you know, just give a quick overview of your diet. And what's a quick overview of your diet? And I started with the person who it didn't work for. And, you know, they're a pretty common fast food eater. You know, people always, when I ask a question like that, want to like kind of save face and be like, well, you know, but I also really like, you know, like stir fries, you know, but common fast food eater. And then the other one was like, yeah, you know, I'm pretty focused on vegetables, and, you know, I eat minimal meat, and if I do, I make sure it's good quality, and, you know, and I eat a lot of, you know, broccoli and kale and that type of, and I live right next to a farm or whatever it was. And
yeah,
I was
like, okay, yeah.
Well, there you go. There's the difference, is that one's eating a pro-inflammatory diet and the turmeric didn't really work well for them, and the other one's eating an anti-inflammatory diet. It doesn't really take too much, but we're trained in a culture of specialties that we should rely on the specialist. But unfortunately, nutrition is very cutting edge science, and there is so much to cut through to really, you know, if you have a perspective on nutrition, you can basically look it up and find somebody that is going to support it, whether it's good for you or not. You know, we each have to be, as you said, it's the perfect statement. We all have to be our own healthcare advocate. It's too much to expect, whether it be, you know, a doctor or your herbalist or any other health practitioner, to only be the ones concerned about your health, because nobody knows your body like you do.
100%. Yes. And especially most people who are listening to this podcast are spiritually minded and connected in, and use that connection with your guides and with your higher self and connect in and ask for the information, because your body will tell you. Your body will tell you what's going on. You just have to listen. And oftentimes we're not actually listening.
Well, and you just really hit the nail on the head with that aspect of, we need to be willing to slow down and actually allow our bodies, because our bodies are always communicating with us, but we're so busy these days with this and that.
Yep.
Unfortunately, the idea of, you know, any of the catchphrases, any of the words self-care becomes, you know, this like hoity-toity thing, or, you know, meditation. Oh, I can't possibly do that. I can't get my brain to sit still, or I can't possibly think of nothing. It's like not understanding what these practices are. Because that was me. I was, I remember I actually got scolded in my first meditation class because I fell asleep, because I didn't really understand what was happening. And ultimately I find for me, like a gentle walking meditation, like in my backyard, where I'm yes. just paying attention to everything around me and not focusing on what's flittering in my brain. Like, I know it's still there. Thoughts still come, but it allows me to shift to like, oh, there's a hawk, you know, like just to pay attention to what's going on and to allow myself to really listen to my body and pay attention to those thoughts, not to attach onto them, but to recognize, you know, our guides often communicate in ways that you need to develop the understanding of how to hear, you know, of how to really, you can listen, but how to really hear, you know, what those are. And sometimes they're going to go against the things that you really love. Like, oh, I really love cheese. It can't possibly be cheese. There's got to right. be another way. And it's like, yeah. well, maybe you can just take a break from it.
Yeah.
Do a little bit more deeper understanding, a little bit more deeper investigation. And maybe you will be able to reintroduce that thing that you love. Being able to allow ourselves to redefine ourselves as we have this human experience is so incredibly important, that when we just get stuck in this self-definition that maybe was 10 years ago, but doesn't really suit you now, it 100%. Really limits
yeah.
you know, your ability to interact with the world, because you're just stuck in this place. And then that stagnation will create a physical manifestation of some type of symptom. I've seen it happen over and over. And then you create this, you know, this way of breaking through and having a new experience. And it can be, the tiniest thing can be absolutely life-changing for one person and not mean anything for another. And in being a teacher, I've found it's so important to recognize that all of us, whether you're a teacher or not, we're always planting seeds, both physical and metaphorical seeds. And life is planting seeds with us. And it's really up to us to decide, like, what do we want to cultivate within ourselves, both within our garden, of course, but also what are we cultivating in ourselves? And that really, in what we, how we present ourselves to the world, we never know the full impact of what we're having on the world. You know, as a teacher, I was able to have, and I would imagine as a podcaster, you get some feedback from people saying like, wow, that episode really affected me. And I thank you so much for doing what you're doing. And I would get the same thing as a teacher. And I always appreciate that feedback. But, you know, that feedback is like less than 10% of the class of as far as the people there. And you really don't know. I've had plenty of people come back 5 years later and say, wow, your class really completely affected my path. And I changed trajectory. after your class. And I never even told you that. And it's like, wow, so cool.
Yeah. It's the same with the Akashic Records. So sometimes, people won't know the difference that it makes until 6 months later or a year later. You don't know. Yeah. You don't know how anything is going to hit somebody. So when that happens, you're going to have to also, as a person who is receiving the sort of information and the healing, you're going to have to allow it to settle in a way that works for you. Because, you know, you as a practitioner can give, and you know, either advice or you can give suggestions, you can help, you can teach, but they're going to have to take it themselves and they're going to have to really dive into their own intuition and ask, okay, what is the best option for me? And that's part of the teaching process, is teaching somebody to know how to listen, right? Because you were saying everybody is going to listen differently. So whether you're going to listen through your actual ears and your clairaudience, or whether you're going to listen through, like you said, observing just like a really beautiful flower or something, whatever it happens to be and whatever your practice is, it needs to be something that is tailored for your particular energy field, for your experience that you're going to love to do. Because if you try to do something that somebody else does and you don't love it, it's not going to stick. And you're not going to want to do it. And the energy of it is not going to work, you know? So you have to make it your own.
I get really sad when I hear like professional, successful, financially successful people say, don't make your hobby your job, make your job something that's going to pay your bills and give you a comfortable life. And then you can do your hobby later. And I just, unless your job is something that you're really passionate about, to me, like, and I've even heard, like, heard people say, like, you should not follow your passion when it comes to your job. If your passion is your job, then you'll just get burned out on your passion. And I just really, really disagree. I have not been very mainstream in my choices. And yet I live a life of gratitude every single day, because not only do I love my job, and yes, it is work, even if you love it, but I come into that work with, I am so grateful every single day that this is the work that both I chose and I feel like has chosen me. And when I've had one Akashic record session many years ago, and it really spoke to how the spirit tribe of in the physical realm that I work with, that the people that I work with now are people that I have worked with in past as well. That this connection to people who are connected to nature, we have been in community before. And this is part of, you know, all of our soul's existence is participating in this life. And I am beyond grateful, not only for that clarity, but also to just know it within myself. You know, my husband says the same thing. We talk about this all the time, because when we first got together, he didn't own a computer. And he was a massage therapist, very gifted, but financially, it just was, it's a real manual labor job.
Yeah, it's tough.
It is. And ultimately, I had an herbal business where I was teaching classes, and I didn't really see how he would fit into my business, because he's not an herbalist. But then we had something happen, and he met this person that taught him how to be able to understand computer talk, but also how to research. So if you don't understand something, you can just look it up and you can have somebody explain it to you. And now he built our entire website with our combined vision. He runs all of the back end, which I cannot do. And I'm so thankful because he can see my vision and he can interpret it now in as a way to make the computer and our website present this vision, which, you know, I can't do, honestly. It's so interesting. He had to change his own perspective of himself as not a computer person, because now nobody in his family understands what he does, because they never thought he would do anything like this.
Mm. I love those complementary energies that sort of come together, because that's exactly what you need. It's not everybody's going to be absolutely fabulous at everything. So you pull together your soul team, so to speak, and you have those complementary energies and you help each other get to where you need to go. It's beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when it comes to herbalism in general, what would be one thing that you would suggest everyone to do right now to integrate it into their lives in some way?
Sorry, all these things are running through my head. And the thing that just, as I'm looking out my window, the thing that's really screaming to be said is the thing that I kind of started with is, and some people would say this doesn't really sound like herbal medicine, but it's the really just paying attention to acknowledge that historically, you know, for thousands and thousands of years, humans were hunter-gatherers and had to have a relationship with plants and ecology, but especially the rhythms of nature. And when we recognize that, everybody had a relationship with the rhythms of nature. And that means that we recognize that that flower that I see right now is not going to be there forever. It's going to be gone for a period of time. And that helps to teach us to not be latching on to, you know, there's so many lessons that we can recognize to recognize the really high times and the beauty of life when it's happening, because that is what a joyous part of life. But also remember those times when we're going through a rough time. And if you're having a rough time, one of the easiest ways to remind yourself that this too shall pass is to go outside and see that flower, the new one that's there now, you know, that wasn't there maybe a month ago. And while this doesn't necessarily have to do with the taking of an herb for a symptom, we can also, you know, make that bridge as well with recognizing that our senses are the way that we interact with the world. So the old idiom of stopping to smell the roses, that's real. When you actually not only recognize, wow, that rose is really beautiful, and then go and embed your nose in it, you are literally having a physical relationship with this flower. You are taking its essence into your body. And that is having a profound effect, whether you are conscious about it or not. So just the act of herbal medicine is, to me, just the relationship with those herbs. You know, there are plenty of people that may use herbs, but have no idea, you know, maybe they just go to the store and buy something and use it and it works. And so they use it regularly, but then maybe they're, you know, on vacation and they're touring, their family wanted to go to Disneyland and they see the apiary and, you know, you all of a sudden realize like, wait a second, I recognize that plant name that's in my formula. And all of a sudden you're making this connection, you know, between your small little role in taking an herbal supplement and the bigger picture of where do herbs come from? You know, herbs are medicine for the people around the world. And that when we recognize that, I feel like it's an avenue to tap into our ancestry, to tap into, you know, these are the things that your, you know, your grandparents, your great grandparents, like these are the things that people turn to because, you know, aspirin was the first pharmaceutical drug to be patented and it was patented in 1899. And so then people think like, okay, that's when, you know, drugs start being used, but where did that aspirin came from? A plant. And before that aspirin was purified into a pill, it was used as a plant. Mm-hmm. So this idea that, you know, that herbal medicine is this alternative way of healing to me is just a really preposterous concept because we all
it's the original.
It is. We all have herbal medicine in our history. And the idea, like I've heard people say like, oh, you know, I hate the taste of vegetables. And it's just like, I mean, even that, like having a relationship with eating vegetables, you know, you don't use herbs, but you eat vegetable matter. Well, those are plants too. You know, there's such a deep relationship with plants that people don't even realize that they have. That's a big part of my job is just that reminding people. And that's what, to kind of cycle back to your question, that would be my recommendation for where to start with herbal medicine is to recognize that you're already connected. And just by taking notice of it and using your senses, your sense of sight, your sense of smell, your sense of taste, even the hearing, like there's a cottonwood tree where when the wind blows, you can hear the leaves dance. It's this amazing thing. Or when I bring my students to a conifer forest and we close our eyes on a windy day, the wind going through the trees sounds like the waves breaking on the ocean.
Beautiful.
It's just this amazing experience when you allow yourself to have it.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful rhythm to get into as well when you are able to, as you said, connect to the rhythm of the plants and the seasons, because that's something that we don't have in the United States nearly as much as we do here in France. Like when I moved here, I was actually really pleasantly surprised that even when you go to the regular grocery store, you know, you're not even going to the farmers markets. If you go to the grocery store, they, you know, yes, of course you can buy pretty much anything, but you clearly know what is in season because they put everything that is in season front and center, and there are seasons for everything. And now it's like, I've gotten to know the rhythm of the seasons here in France where like, okay, I know every August they are going to have plum season and it's going to be these Mirabelles that are like delicious and I love them. And it's like, okay. And so now I know when plum season is, when strawberry season is, when apple season is, like all of these things. So it's like eating seasonally here is so much easier than it is in the US. Oh, nice. Like when I was in the US, I was like, I have no idea what seasons are or anything because you can basically get anything anytime, anywhere, you know? So it's like, it's about actually connecting in and saying, okay, well, you know, what is this piece of fruit or is this vegetable flying in from, you know, Costa Rica or is it something that's local, you know? So like really connecting into the rhythms of the seasons and what is grown when can also help you sort of connect in. And even if you don't want to grow plants, that'll at least help you feel a little bit more connected to what is happening on a regular basis with the growing cycles.
Absolutely. As well as the joy of experiencing the ripeness. Like so many things are harvested before they're ripe. And I had this experience a lot when I first moved to Southern California. We have some citrus trees in my yard. And then, you know, I go home to Michigan where citrus does not grow. And this is like early on. And my family was like, oh, hey, we're looking for organic food for you. And so we found this bag of oranges. And I was like, oh, store-bought oranges. Okay, thank you. Like, I appreciate appreciate what they're trying to do. But then I tried it and oh, it was terrible. They were terrible. Because once you actually get to experience like apples, you can get apples any time of year in a grocery store. But when you've experienced eating an apple that maybe traveled, you know, 1,000 miles and has been sitting in a warehouse for 6 months, and then you pick an apple off of a tree and you eat it, it is not even comparable. And yet how many people in this country have never actually had a fresh piece of fruit? So don't understand the difference. Like I had a friend come and visit from Oregon and we had some oranges hanging on the tree and they said, are those edible oranges? And I was like, are there not edible oranges? And she's like, well, I don't know. I've never been around a citrus tree. And I was like, really? You've never picked a citrus and eaten it from the tree? And she said, no. And I was like, please do it. And so she picked an orange and she peeled it and she was going to, she pulled like one piece off. So because that first bite was like heaven, and she was going to hold a piece so that her husband that she was traveling with could also experience it. And she was like, it was so good. I ate every bit. And now I have to go grab him so he can pick his own orange, because that was a truly pleasure filled and joyful experience. That is the simplest thing, just like my eating of that little oxalis. And yet so many people don't get any joy from eating because they don't understand a seasonally fresh thing is so much better.
Oh my God, so much better.
So much better.
And when you've grown it yourself too, like I remember the first time I had a pepper plant and I bought the pepper plant from a nursery. I couldn't grow from seed at that time yet. I think I spent like $10 on the plant or something like that. And it only grew one pepper. And I was like, all right. So that was like literally the most expensive pepper I've ever had. But literally, it was the best pepper I have ever tasted. Yep. You know, I have a question for you. Where in Michigan are you from?
Grand Rapids.
Oh, okay. So I grew up just outside of Detroit. So you'll understand this. So I am always, always, always missing going to apple farms and going to apple picking, and especially this time of year, like going to the cider mills and getting a donut and apple cider, like the best thing in the world. And, you know, when I moved to Chicago after college, I was like, okay, so where's the cider mills? And people are like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you have no cider mills here? They're like, no, why would we have cider mills here? And I'm like, that was my first sadness regarding like, oh, right. Okay. Apples are a Michigan thing. Okay, cool.
Yep.
So that's what also makes it kind of special too, is that like, you know, now that I'm here in France, it's like, okay, Mirabelles, I get them here, but I can't get them in the US, you know? So, and that's totally okay, because when I go to the US, I have other things, you know? So it's It's not about having everything everywhere every time just because you want it, right? It's actually appreciating what you have at the moment that you have it in the best form that you can have it.
Exactly. Yeah. Because when you get everything you want all the time, nothing has any specialty, nothing has any significance, because it's just available all the time, but you don't really, like I've heard, because now I want to travel to France and try Mirabelles.
Definitely.
I've also heard that like the mangoes in the United States are like pathetic compared to the mangoes of India. Mm. And that like people who've actually eaten mango in India, which I've heard from listening to different podcasts called like mango orgies, like being in a grove of mango trees that you literally are like gorging on mangoes, and that anybody who's had that experience, the mangoes here, which I'm like, oh my God, these are amazing. They're like, yeah, no, they're not.
If listeners out there haven't had an experience where you can literally remember a time and a place where you had a piece of fruit or a vegetable, search out that experience and look for these fresh pieces of fruit or veggies.
Right, because they're everywhere.
They're everywhere, and you can have these experiences. I mean, I remember being in New Zealand and trying a golden kiwi fruit, and I had never had one before. Ooh. And it was, I remember like opening the door to my hotel room, and I had just gone to the grocery store, and I had, you know, these kiwi fruits, and I had just like, I was so hungry. I just like kind of bit into it, and I just stood in the doorway and ate it. And I was just like, that was the best thing I've ever had. You know,
it's like your brain is exploding with all this like taste information. Like, oh my God.
Yes.
Yeah. We had that with the tangerine tree that we have on this property. It is the most seeded tangerine I've ever had. And it is the sweetest, most amazing tangerine that I've ever had. And yes, it's a little annoying to pick the seeds out, but it's so worth it, because now we have all of these like seedless fruits being sold, except when you get to know plants, no plant would ever produce a fruit without seeds.
Right.
In nature. It just wouldn't happen.
Exactly.
And that the seeds are actually connected to the development of the sugar and the antioxidants. So a seeded watermelon is always going to be a little bit sweeter than a not seeded watermelon, because it's literally part of the genetics of the fruit to develop its sugars in relationship to seed development, so that then the animals will come and eat it. It's part of that. And we've taken away some of the both sweetness and nutrition of a fruit or vegetable to replace it with convenience of being able to have access to it all the time. And that's a really unfortunate compromise.
How do you feel about organic, non-organic, GMO, non-GMO, like all of those things when it comes to, let's say, making tinctures, combining herbs? I actually downloaded, you have a little mini course on your website, which I would encourage everybody to go to your website and download the little mini course that you have. It's at sagecountryherbs.com. And you were talking about fire cider.
Yeah.
I was looking at the, you know, the whole ingredients that you have put together for that. So what would you recommend people always use, organic, non-GMO, or what are your thoughts on that?
My opinion about GMOs is that we are the long-term studies, and I try to avoid them as much as possible. Of course, with the labeling laws as they are, that is much easier said than done. So while I very much appreciate organic, and I will try to eat organic when buying in a grocery store, what I think is more important is sourcing as close to you as possible. So I would way rather eat, you know, a carrot from a local farm that may not be certified organic, because it's generally $15,000 to $30,000 for certification. But most of the farms around here, San Diego County has an excessive number of farms because we have a 12-month growing season here. And so there are plenty of small farms that don't have the money to get certified, but grow by all the organic standards, and often even better, like by sustainable and regenerative standards. So actually cultivating the soil and the microbiome of the soil so that the plants can have more nutrition. So sourcing locally from people who are growing with organic standards to me is even better than going to the store and buying an organic carrot that then traveled 500 miles from you know, where it came from. And a lot of big stores that are selling organics are sourcing them from still monocropped, large, you know, 1,000-acre farms. Those are not farms that have a relationship with the microbiota of the earth. They are producing a commodity. So I really think one of the most important things for people to do is recognize that food comes from the earth, and the less distance and time from when it's harvested to when it gets on your plate, the higher concentration of nutrition, but also the higher concentration of the vibration of the plant itself. And then we're taking in that living energy. Yeah, especially when it comes to medicine making, I think sourcing really clean, you know, if I'm doing ethical wildcrafting, that's something that it's not as easy done as said, because like around here, for instance, there is, you know, we have millions and millions of cars and lots of roads everywhere. So there's that part of it. There's also a lot of air pollution. But beyond that, you can be out in the middle of what feels like the middle of nowhere. You can't see any houses, but maybe there was a wildfire there a couple of years ago and they dropped flame retardant on that. So really, the whole idea of ethical wildcrafting takes a lot more investigation, not only in learning about the ecosystems and the plants and what you can use them for, but also learning about some of the history of the land, whether it's ethical even to be there, let alone, you know, what type of damage has it incurred in the past. So once again, that idea of staying as close to you as possible and supporting your local farms, that also takes the pressure off of the bigger scope of food production. When more people are going to farmers markets or more people are going to farms, you're actually putting your money back in the community around you, supporting your community and having a higher quality health. So all of these things really just interconnect together. And the idea of using, you know, genetically modified food in making medicine is like, yeah, but I don't necessarily know exactly what the difference in this is. That right. type is not really presented as material because most mainstream people wouldn't understand it anyway. I really feel like as close to nature as we can be and as close to supporting our local communities, because when you actually talk to farmers, if they're growing by organic standards, whether they're certified or not, they're going to tell you about it because it's a lot of work.
Right. I have learned recently, and this is just through talking to people. I went out to the Champaign region and I did a little Champaign tour with this vineyard. And the woman who owns the vineyard was talking about how basically everybody in the region where she is, like the hillside where she is, they all farm organically because they're all sort of part of the same team. And if one crop has a problem, the rest of them are going to have a problem too, because they're all in the same vicinity. And so they haven't gotten their certifications yet because they're, you know, the standards are really high and they, you know, they've got all of these hoops they have to jump through. But they, like you said, their standards are actually higher than what they are required to have. But there's a waiting period. There's all these things. And so she's like, yeah, so technically our Champaign is organic, but we don't have the, we just don't have the sticker. We don't have the certification. And almost all of the Champaigns you can get from this region are going to be the same as well. And so then there was another person I was talking to recently who was saying, oh yeah, you know, we source our coffee in South America, but you know, it, they say it's not organic, but I've spoken to the growers and they can't actually even afford pesticides. So most of the stuff they use is organic anyway, because they can't afford pesticides. And I was like, that's so crazy. I never even thought about that. Like I never would have thought about the fact that like it's so ingrained in our heads that everything, oh, well, if it doesn't say organic, then that must mean that they all use pesticides. And that's just not the case. So to source locally and then to get to know where your stuff is coming from. And I'm saying stuff because I mean meat. If you eat meat, I'm talking veggies. I'm talking all
absolutely.
Of that. Like know where
absolutely.
It comes from. Because that's going to make such a difference, not only on your body, but your energetic body. So this is part of the reason why I wanted to have this conversation today, other than the fact that Shayna, you're just fascinating and I needed to interview you the second I knew you existed. So like,
thank you.
But I was, you know, really wanting to talk about this because when we are going through our spiritual awakening and we're on the spiritual journey, these are all things that help support us in not having a horrible time at it. You know, like, it's hard enough to go through what we go through on our journey to begin with. And if your body is not being supported in a way that is going to help you, then you know what? It's going to make it so much harder. And I want to make it clear that it's just like how your body is being supported. So if that means you have to be vegan, cool, be vegan. If that means that you have to eat meat, eat meat. I'm not saying that you have to be a vegan or you have to be a vegetarian or you have to be anything, but it's about what your body is asking for. What does your body want? And listen to your body. What does your body need? With diet and all of what we're talking about, nutrition, and then in addition to what you're doing, Shayna, which is having this incredible knowledge of herbs and other plants that can help you as plant medicine and things like that, with all of that support, it can help you to not only have a better time, but then have a better connection with the land and the people and in your community around you. It's a, like you said, it's a win-win.
Yeah, absolutely.
You actually teach people how to do this.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about your school and how people can find you, register? Are some of the classes online? Do people have to be there in person? Like what are all the details?
Sure, I'd be delighted to. So the school started about 10 years ago. I was doing classes before that, but the real solidifying factor of our school, Sage Country Herb School of Botanical Studies, started about 10 years ago with my field program. And that really came from, you know, I did 4 herbal apprenticeships over the course of, I believe, 6 years. And during that time, they all had an impact on me, but the one that really impacted me the most was the Columbine School of Botanical Studies. And that's because the first 2 herbal schools that I went to were garden-based and they were beautiful and wonderful. And I learned a lot. But when I went out and did the Columbine School, it was because it was coming from a different perspective. And that's kind of the beauty of herbalism is not regulated in the United States. And of course, there are some people that say, oh, it should be. And others that say, no, we don't want it to be. And ultimately, what it means to me is that you don't have the cookie cutter effect of herb schools. Each herb school is developed by the person that's passionate enough to develop it. And they're all going to come from slightly different perspectives because there are so many perspectives on herbal medicine from around the world. So when I learned field botany, when I learned to actually go out into nature and meet plants where they choose to grow, something really shifted for me and that relationship. And so when I started Sage Country Herbs down here in Southern California, I found a niche down here, which when you're surrounded by this many people, I didn't think I was going to find that. But the only other field programs are in universities and you have to be part of the full program. So our program is we do 6 months, January through the beginning of June, and we're out in the field. And this happens every year. We now have a second year that also runs concurrently. I don't like doing field classes in the summertime here because, quite frankly, the summertime is very hot and it's not as enjoyable to go hiking. And a lot of our plants start doing a dormancy in the summer, whereas most places it's in the winter. But our summer is when the plants need to really be protecting their roots. So then on top of that, I take 14 people. We keep the field class small. We realized very quickly that there's no way I'm ever going to retire just teaching 14 people. And how could we actually get more, be involved with more? And so we developed, there is an online component. We now have a 2-year online program that runs alongside the field. So people could choose to do the field or they could choose to do the field with the full online program. But then if somebody can't work it out in their schedule to be able to come out in the field, then they can also just do the online program and get a lot out of that as well. So our field classes always start in January and go through May or June or right around June. And then the online program is there. It's basically broken down to 5 courses over 2 years. So there's 3 courses in the first year that run consecutively, and then 2 courses in the second year that run consecutively. And we're doing everything from, you know, plant ID to actions and energetics of plants and how to use them. I also think it's really important to understand energetics in the plant world are also speaking to energetics in the person and energetics in the environment. So, you know, if a plant tends to be drying and then the person tends to have a dry constitution and then they live in a desert that's also very dry with very low humidity, a dry plant may not be appropriate for them.
Yeah.
that energetic of place, energetic of person, and energetic of plant, the three P's. And so we teach all of that. And then we also teach about, you know, recognizing toxic botanicals and the difference between, sometimes the difference between poison and medicine is just a dosage. And so learning how to have those, that real understanding about the appropriateness of using a plant. And then I also get into, in the second year, we get into clinic and working clinically and how to look for red flags and all of those types of things. And then we're at this point also working on a third year, which is an ethical teacher training, because I just hear so many horror stories about people taking random classes here or there and being taught to eat this thing that they called, you know, one thing, but then really it wasn't that thing. Or there's just, I feel like ethics needs to be part of the conversation. And so instead of, I don't believe as much about complaining about what I don't like as trying to put it out into the universe, what I do like and what I do feel is really necessary. So really getting people to want to come from a place of ethics within learning about herbs. So the other thing about the two-year program that we tried to make it really user-friendly, it consists of 5 courses outside of the field. And each one of those courses could also be taken separately so that somebody could try it out and see, do they like my communication style? Am I coming from a place that they feel drawn? And then that way, if they really love it, then they can dive into the full 2-year program. I also do a lot of hands-on live workshops as a way to get people to realize like, wow, actually, this is really cool. And there's probably a lot more cool stuff to learn. So we do Eat Your Weeds workshops. Like I just did an immunity workshop where we made a really potent elderberry syrup. We made fire cider, and then we took the elderberry syrup and made some gummies out of it as well. You know, just really, you know, we have a distillation hydrosol class coming up, a mixology class. We're just always really trying to create more community. And then I'm also at this point, because we have such a good community, I'm really into supporting my local community. So like the mixology class, for example, is being taught by one of my students.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And then the hydrosol class, the distillation, is a co of me and my friend Cindy Christ, who is a master distiller. And so I love helping to take this light and shining it on other members of the community, because that's really how we build community. I love the way that my mentor, Howie Brownstein, talks when people would bring up the idea of his students creating schools and him having competition. He said, I don't believe in competition in the herbal world, because there is so few of us in comparison to the bigger world around us, that the more herbalists you have in an area, the more people have access to what herbal medicine can be. And yeah. I think that's a really beautiful way to support it, because the more we can interlock our communities, mm-hmm. the more abundance we have to share, instead of coming at it from a place of scarcity and competition.
That's fantastic and absolutely necessary. 100%.
Yeah. Our next class coming up is in January, and that one is called Actions and Energetics of Southwest Plants. But the way that we teach about it, while we're using Southwest plants like sage to be able to talk about these actions and energetics, the concepts covered apply to any plants anywhere. And so anyone could take this class online from anywhere and be able to learn about what an astringent does and how to use a bitter effectively, as well as, like, I'll throw out, like, you know, sage is a great aromatic bitter, but what would be other aromatic bitters that maybe you know about, like lavender or chamomile or catnip, that don't necessarily natively grow here, but maybe they're growing on your balcony.
Yes.
You know, or in your garden.
And in fact, they are. Although the catnip is growing inside, so my cat has access to it, so he can go and chomp on it anytime he wants, really. So
the stray cats will just destroy your catnip outside is what I've found. They will love it to death.
Exactly. Wonderful. Well, that is perfect timing. So you still have availability for the class in January for the in-person class?
The in-person class, we have 1 spot remaining. We fill early for that.
All right. Wonderful. Yep. So for 1 lucky person, hopefully, maybe they will be able to snag that spot. And
absolutely.
For everyone else, how can they get a hold of you social media wise?
Right. Well, we try to make it really easy with social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, and they're all the same, Sage Country Herbs.
Amazing. Wonderful. Shayna, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. And I love talking about plants. I could talk about plants all day long.
Absolutely. Right, right.
Thank you again. This has been really enlightening, and I thank you so much for what you do.
Oh, thank you, Annette. This has been a really enjoyable conversation. And I also thank you for what you do. I went into your podcast history and listened to a few, and I love the light that you shine, and I really appreciate you inviting me to be part of it.
Oh, you are so very welcome, and thank you. Again, Sage Country Herbs, SageContryHerbs.com. Thank you so much for joining us today, and I will see you for the weekly channeled message on Friday. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have an amazing day and never stop exploring your soul, because it is the most important relationship you will ever have. If you are interested in learning more about me and the sessions that I do, feel free to go to my website at infinitesoullove.com. On all social media, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, at infinitesoullove1111. Hey, and if you feel called, I would love it if you could rate The Heart of You on whatever streaming service you're using, whether it's Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Please take a moment, give it a review. It really does help the channel. Thanks so much.